This podcast is sponsored by Sophie Reepdress. She makes cave suits. She makes some of the best cave suits. She is a small one-person business based in Philadelphia. She started making leggings. She expanded from there. When she started caving, she was looking for suits and she didn't notice a lot to choose from. Let's be real. There's not a lot out there. What is out there is pretty good, but they're not for everybody. And her cave suits, Sophie's cave suits, are made with 500 denier cordura all around. And then thicker, twice as thick where it counts, elbows, butts, knees, where you need a little extra reinforcement. And while other cave suits come in, you know, a few colors, hers come in a variety, a big variety, and you can custom order them. She starts from basic suits. You can add things on like extra pockets, inside pockets, always convenient. Protect whatever in there from getting knocked around. Knee pad pockets, just slip the knee pads right into the cave suit, or a bat stencil, wherever you want it, wherever you want it. And again, everything's made to order just for you. Sophie Reepdress. Find her on Instagram at Sophie Reepdress. She's got like 30-some thousand followers, and she has a website, sophiereepdress.com. I've got it in the description of this podcast. Get a cave suit from Sophie. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. Grotto is a chapter of our national organization, the National Speleological Society, or the NSS. And the best way to get involved with caving, or just to go caving, if you've never done it before, or you're interested at all in any way, or maybe you think you've gone caving, maybe you went with some friends with some flashlights and no helmets and you thought that was cool. Well, good. I'm glad you made it out. Totally fine. Whatever gets you into it. But let's do it safely so that cavers don't have to come out and rescue you. And we do talk a little bit about rescue in this episode. But I've got a link in the description of this podcast to help you find your local grotto through the NSS. And chances are there's one nearby. And even if there isn't, most grottos are doing virtual meetings now. So find your grotto, get in touch, go caving. NSS website is caves.org, and I've got a link again in the description of this podcast. My guest this month is Mickey Manning, and we had a great talk. A little more on that in just a little bit. It is January. Happy New Year. And I am very excited to be delivering the keynote speech at the Carter Caves State Resort Park in Kentucky, their Winter Adventure Weekend, which is coming up at the end of this month. I would love it if some caving podcast listeners showed up. And if you do, I would love to go caving with you or something, if we can work that out. If you're planning on coming, I would love it if you'd let me know. I'm in the NSS directory, but you can email me at alpineproductions@gmail.com. alpineproductions@gmail.com if you're thinking about coming out. And I don't have any plans yet, aside from delivering the speech. I don't have any plans. I think I'm going to try to get down there on that Thursday night. I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out within the next month, I hope. But it's going to be really fun. I'm going to deliver a bunch of audio from the Caving Podcast, a little bit of multimedia too. And I really kind of can't wait to weave a fresh narrative on the Caving Podcast in person at this event. So if you can come and you'd like to go caving, let me know. Okay, let's get into it. So Mickey and I, we talked about a lot. We talked about her new roles in the NSS, which are really, really impressive and worth hearing about. I think inspiring, you know, for someone who's, I guess, relatively new to caving, but has, you know, gone crazy in caving in a big enough way to want to become involved at the national level. So that's really cool. We talk about some of her tag caving. We talk about trips that she's got coming up. And Mickey just seems like somebody who is, I mean, she's the real deal. She is into it. She is dug in, man. And we also talked about Marion Smith. And we recorded this just weeks, like a couple of weeks before he passed away. So it was kind of heavy going through here and editing this episode just now. I appreciated the New York Times obituary that Marion Smith got. My goodness, that was cool. Called him the world's most prolific cave explorer, I think. So we'll get to that soon. It's Mickey Manning on the Caving Podcast. Mickey, how long have you been caving?
Just about 3 years.
But you've been getting wild with it, right? You've been getting weird with it. What do I mean by that? You've been getting serious about it.
Well, in love super quickly. So I think my excitement just took me to places really fast. You know, my first caving experience was in Belize.
In Belize? They got some good stuff there.
They do. I think a lot of people take trips there now, like real cavers go. But I was just on vacation and I heard about this really cool cave called the ATM Cave.
Wait, do we know why it's called the ATM Cave?
Yes. it's an abbreviation for a native name that I cannot pronounce.
Oh, okay.
But right. Literally everybody, even the locals, calls it ATM Cave.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So it is a tourist attraction, but it's very wild, and you have to have a leader come and take you. And it's got this big swim-in entrance, so you actually have to get wet before you ever even go in the cave. And then the real attraction is the Crystal Maiden, which is skeletal remains of what they thought was a young female, yeah, that had been crystallized in the back of the cave. It turns out it was actually a 14-year-old boy.
But still, so, okay. So maybe you don't know this because you just visited there. How long had that body been there to allow this crystallization? Did they tell you?
Yeah, I think it was, so I think that was the last sacrifice that was in there. There's actually, I want to say 14 skeletons in there maybe, but they're not all crystallized like that, but they're all sacrificial. So at first wow. It was, I think, the Mayans, and then the Aztecs came into the area, and I want to say it was about 900 AD that sacrifice was from, but
whoa.
they used the cave as a sort of religious place. So they weren't getting rain for their crops. So they're like, uh-oh, we need to do something. And apparently the thing to do was
go in the cave and get some water.
Well, or, you know, murder somebody. And
wow.
But it was my first experience with a cave, and it was just so different than anything that I had ever done. So adventurous, and it was kind of like a jungle gym. And all these cool historical things inside, you know, all the pottery that was left behind, the skeletons, the sense of adventure. It was really cool. So I think I was hooked already, but after that, I went to Carlsbad Caverns less than a year later. And have you been to Carlsbad Caverns?
I have not been to Carlsbad yet. I'm sorry to say. Get to go, I'm sure, eventually, but I haven't made it.
It's spectacular. I mean, nothing short of spectacular. You go in there, and I mean, there's an elevator that it takes you 700 feet down into the main chambers, and it's just the biggest rooms and the biggest formations that are many stories high. It's so incredibly impressive. But I went on a wild tour there where they give you like the helmet and the knee pads and all that. And you have to sign a waiver. So that was my first introduction to like a little bit tougher caving, where you were squeezing through things. And I'm sure if I went back now, it would be so easy and it would be such a breeze. And I wouldn't think anything of it. But at the time, it was so challenging.
Is that part of what hooked you, the fact that it was so challenging and so different and so much, as you said, an adventure? Because that seems to be a theme among cavers, is that's when the switch flips, when you realize there's something out there that gives you this sense that nothing else in the world ever has.
Yeah, 100%. I love the challenge of it, the physical challenge of it, and putting myself in situations that are a little bit outside my comfort zone, or sometimes a lot outside my comfort zone. But the amount of satisfaction that you feel after a hard caving trip is just unmatched by anything, I think. What got you into caving?
Kind of the same thing. Just the fact, like I had felt muscles that I'd never felt before, you know, and they were sore for days.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, that's different. Let's do that again. Well, and the fact that like I was in this environment that I could picture so many of my friends like not handling. You know what I mean? I was like, here's something that I can do that very few people I know can do, I'm sure. You know, everyone's always talking about claustrophobia and things like that. And it's not this exclusive thing for me. I don't know. It's not the high of being able to do something that nobody else can do. or not nobody, but a few other people can do. Yeah. But okay, it's hard to say that it's not that, but it's kind of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of that.
It is kind of that, yeah.
So, okay, so you go to Belize, you're like, oh, this is cool. Then you go to Carlsbad. Did you go to Carlsbad because you had been to Belize and you're like, oh, man, this might be a thing that I'm into?
No. So my mom and my best friend and I, we try to take a trip to a national park every year. And so Carlsbad Caverns was just kind of up on the list. So we went there and we went to White Sands, which at the time was just a national monument. And then we drove over to Big Bend National Park. Okay. Yeah, it was just kind of a coincidence, but it was turned out to be really formative.
And so then Tumbling Rock, it seems like.
Yeah. So, well, after that, I had, after the Hall of the White Giant trip, which is the wild tour that I did at Carlsbad Caverns, which I highly recommend.
Hmm.
I started asking the rangers. I'm like, well, you know, how do I do more of this? And they first introduced me to the word grotto. I had never heard it before. they're like, well, where do you live? And I said, Atlanta. And they're like, oh, well, you live in Tag. You know, you're in the heart of caving. I had no idea. so I went online and I found my nearest grotto. You know, they told me to go to caves.org and I was like, okay. And I found Dogwood City Grotto and I paid my dues and I just started showing up at meetings and basically force people to take me caving. and like you always say, you know, there's always people that are really good with new cavers when you show up. And of course, those people took me in and took me caving. And Tumbling Rock, have you been there?
I have been once. I went on a a silly formal wear trip around the holidays. Yeah,
I haven't actually been on one of those, but I've seen all the pictures.
I can't wait to go back. Like, there's more of Tumbling Rock that I want to see, and I want to, you know, go with some people who want to like go to the back or whatever. But but yeah, I went to the, I made it to the Christmas tree and back out in a suit, which was fun.
Oh, you got to wear a suit. Usually, the men have to wear dresses.
Oh well, maybe that was after my time. I can't remember. I think it was 16 or 17 when I did. I think I had to have been 16 because I wouldn't have been able to go in 17.
Oh, wow. But Tumbling Rock is a fabulous cave. It's huge. It's 7 miles long. And have you, I don't know if you heard about the new extension in there, Topless Dome. I mean, it's not new, but it's been Rachel Saker.
Yeah.
Actually.
She's told me all about it. We actually had, we had some beers together. She, you know, was going to Lafayette, Indiana, and to work on some windmills up there. And she was in Indianapolis. We stopped by and she told me all about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. She's, climbed to the top.
Yeah. I haven't been yet. She said she will take me and I really want to take her up on it, but we both travel for work. So it's hard to kind of schedule.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you come down, I'll take you anywhere in there you want to go. But my first trip in there was just to the Christmas tree, which is probably where you went to. And it's the kind of typical beginner trip in there.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when we showed up, it was just me and a friend. We ran into some people that had never been before. So the guy I was with was like, you guys should probably come with us. You know, if you've never been in this cave before, you know, we'll show you where to go or I'll show you where to go. And they ended up sticking with us. And I think they would have been completely lost had our friend not kind of adopted them. Because once you get in there, I mean, it's Tumbling Rock's not a difficult cave, but you can definitely get turned around. And I would not do it without somebody who had been before, I think.
Yeah, it's not exactly linear, I guess you might say.
Right.
Or it didn't seem like it when I was in there. I could be completely wrong about that. So then you're in Dogwood City Grotto and... And you make it into leadership pretty early on.
Well, you know how that is.
Yeah.
Probably it's the
same. I do.
It's the same, I think, in probably almost any grotto. There's just a lack of volunteers. Or it's the same people, you know, that have been doing it for 20 years and they just want a break. So anytime a new person comes in that shows any sort of predisposition for leadership, they're like, hey, maybe you should help us out. Yep. So I became the corresponding secretary there and it's an easy job. I mean, I do sit on the board, but it's mainly just sending out Christmas cards and checking the mail. But it's kind of important because you have to keep those landowner relations up, you know, little things that show that we care about them and appreciate them is super important, I think, for grottos to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a great job. And it's, I've met so many really wonderful people being on the board. And we have so many young people on there now that have joined. I think three of our board members are in their 20s, which is amazing.
Yeah, that is.
Our vice chair is 21.
Right on.
Yeah. And he's such a great caver. Alex Lambie, actually. He's such a sharp kid. He's in college, but he's been doing so much caving. He even went out to Montana over the summer. So he's going to be one of those big name cavers, I think, one day.
Do you mind if we talk about, I mean, Dogwood City Grotto puts on the Tag Fall Cave-In, a huge event every year.
Yeah.
And my own grotto puts on Indiana Cave Capers, the Central Indiana Grotto. And our event is small by comparison, but it's still an event. Our event moves around, Tag Fall Cave-In, not so much.
Yeah.
And you often, I mean, gosh, you get four figures, right? You get over 1,000 people?
Sometimes, yeah. It usually hovers right around 1,000. I want to say we came in just shy of 1,000.
So with you being on the board for a couple of years, at least, you know what it takes to get that event off and running. You've got to book all of these vendors. We have one vendor that comes for ours. You
really?
Got to book the band. You know, you're not moving around, so you're not booking the venue necessarily. But, like, what seems to be the biggest lift? Are you planning the next one as soon as that one's over with?
Yeah, so we're actually really lucky. We have a cave-in advisory board that is sort of like a sub-board of DCG, and we have all these people that have been running the cave-in for, gosh, I think, well, 40 years, which the last one was the 44th annual cave-in, and some of the people are the original people that organized the first cave-in. So really, it's just kind of a lot of people already have their assigned jobs. Darren Dopp, he is the one that works with the vendors. Nina and Jeff Martin always do the fire. So it's not as complicated as you might think. I think the complicated part will come when they try to hand over things to the next generation. Because right now, everybody does it kind of automatically, and they know their place.
Well-oiled machine.
Yeah, exactly right. So we've actually brought back the parade the last couple of years, which is the thing that I came in and started organizing. And it's just a hoot. And it was kind of this last year, it was a parade of one. So even though we invite other grottos to participate, nobody else did. Last year, the year before, we had two. Huntsville did a float. It was a pirate theme. Huntsville did an amazing pirate ship that even had a gun that went off in the front.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so we decorate these floats, and the way the cave-in is set up, I'm sure you've been there, right?
Yeah, once.
Yeah.
10 years ago, but I was there.
Oh, you should come next year.
I know. I need to come back, but, you know, family, everything. But yeah. I'll be back. I'll be back one day. I'm going to Sierra next year, as far as I know.
Yeah. When is Sarah?
Second weekend in May.
Okay.
The 11th through the 14th. That is what I've got down.
Yeah. And that one moves around too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, this last year's theme for the cave-in was Rocky Horror Picture Show. Are you familiar?
I mean, I'm not a Rocky head or whatever they call themselves. I know the subculture. I'm aware.
Yes. So I had heard of the movie, but I had never watched it before.
Yeah.
And as homework, I was like, well, I need to watch this so I know what kind of costume to get. And I was utterly shocked. It is, for a movie that was made in the 70s, it is extremely racy. And I was like, wow, okay. So, but for our float, we did like this big stage. And then Andy, my partner, and I, we dressed up in our underwear. So we were like Brad and Janet when they came in from the rain.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And then we had so many cavers, you know, dressed as different parts. But the worst was Frankenfurter. All the guys that dressed as Frankenfurter was, I definitely needed some eye bleach after that.
Oh, gosh. Fantastic.
It's a good time.
So you went, you ended up, I mean, through all of this, you ended up caving with the goat, Marion Smith.
Yes. And I'm so grateful that I got that opportunity.
Did you know at the time, though, what that meant? Had you been told, like, before this happened, like, you're going to be going with, like, the guy?
Yeah, I knew already.
Yeah, okay, well, that's good.
So it was Julie Shank Brown actually invited me.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Her, John Zetterberg, and the GOAT, Marian O. Smith. And we went after a TCS meeting, and there were just some nerd holes close in Middle Tennessee, I guess, near Cookeville or like Falls Creek Falls State Park that they wanted to survey. So it was no big caving trip. And I think Marian at the time, this was probably like 2 years ago, he already was starting to slow down with his caving. But, you know, we went and surveyed these different places, and he was crawling around just as spry as ever, really. And he's such a character. He's got such a memory and a sense of humor. And he's kind of crotchety. Have you met him? I'm sure you have.
I've been adjacent to him, I guess you could say. I was at the Tagfall Cave-In I went to was 2012. So that was his 70th birthday. And so I was there when they did the little celebration, which was really cool. And I had heard of him prior to that.
Yeah.
But some of my friends had kind of moved down to Tag and gotten to, you know that group. And so they were telling me all about him. And so, yeah.
Yeah. He's just like an encyclopedia. Like, the man's a legend for sure.
So then you end up on the Board of Governors?
That's a big jump.
That's
it?
A big jump. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're into this.
Yeah. Well, I really, to be honest, I don't think I quite knew what I was getting myself into. I had already served on the Dogwood City board. And Julie Shank Brown, we were at a camp out at Blue Springs in Tennessee, which is a really cool 40-mile cave system. It's owned by a private landowner, Lonnie Carr, and he's super gracious to cavers. And we host camp outs there nearly every year. But we were all sitting around the fire, and Julie kind of made an announcement. She said, hey, we're looking for directors for next year. If you're interested, let me know, you know. So I asked some questions. I was like, what does it entail? And she's like, oh, just answering a lot of emails. That's all. Right. Well, I could do that, you know. And I had been curious about getting involved on a national level. So I told her, hey, you know, I'll run. I'll do it. I did a debate, which Hazel Barton and Derek Bristol host.
Oh, that one. You were okay.
Yeah. So it's on YouTube. I haven't even watched it because I don't like to watch myself.
Who does?
Afterwards.
Who does?
Just like I won't listen to this interview. But yeah, so I was elected to the Board of Governors. I'm a director for the NSS, which is it's a real honor, especially for somebody that's so new to caving. And I take it really seriously because our job is to kind of shape the future of the NSS. It's to take feedback from the membership, you know, rub elbows with other cavers and see what they want out of our society, you know, where they want their donations to go, where they want their dues to go. So that's kind of the crux of it.
Well, and Mickey, I know that you get this. I know that you understand this, but I think what bears repeating here is that even though you are new, you care enough to get involved. You know, you didn't feel like you needed to earn some kind of stripe to get involved. You just got involved, and that's all that the caving world ever really needs. You know what I mean? There are a lot of people who are waiting in the wings to be asked when really they should just be like, hey, I want to do this.
And I would encourage anyone that has even the slightest interest in volunteering for the NSS or with their local grotto, you should absolutely do it because it's such a good experience. You meet so many interesting people. I know just from being a director, I've already met, I mean, cavers that I've only heard of, like cavers from your podcast that are essentially famous in our world, you know, but it just broadens your horizons and it opens your eyes and your experiences to so many things that you might not normally get to. And I think one of the only ways to learn is to just jump in and start getting your feet wet.
Especially in a world like this where it's so insular and there's so few people doing it, there's really no way to groom yourself. You really just have to just do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are people to guide you and people to help. And I think most cavers, when they know that you're interested, are willing to give you their time and sit down and talk with you about it. So absolutely, everybody should be volunteering if they can.
And in saying that, I realize I was being slightly irresponsible there. I mean, by just do it, I don't mean just go caving. I mean, just get involved so that you get to do it right, obviously. And so, I mean, you mentioned getting to do things because you're in this world now, like Bridge Day.
Oh, yeah. Well, that doesn't have much to do with the NSS necessarily. But
what do you mean? Like, I wouldn't have got, I mean, I've not been to Bridge Day, but I've had multiple offers only through caving. Like, I went to the New River Gorge Bridge back in, I don't know when, but it was like in the mid-2000s. We went on a rafting trip and they were like, yeah, every once a year they close the bridge and have people base jump and rappel off of it. I'm like, ah, that sounds pretty cool. I'll never get to do that. And here, you know, I've turned down multiple offers to go and do it. I could do it next year if I wanted to.
You should do it.
It's only because of caving.
Yeah, that's true. Well, this is another thing. I just kind of reached out and asked Darren Dopp, who is, he's our vertical instructor for Dogwood City Grotto. And he's just a sweet guy. He's an awesome guy, him and his girlfriend, Karen. I know he's the leader of the tag team. So I said, hey, do you have any extra spots? And he said, yep, come on. So,
isn't that just the way cavers are? Like, yeah, come on, give it a shot. It's not like, I don't know, you'll have to, you know. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, but the whole team had to agree to let us on.
Of course.
So that's my partner Andy and I, and then Anna Pierce, who's a good friend of mine. She also was new to the team this year, and oh man, it was a really cool experience. If you haven't seen it, it's the New River Gorge Bridge, and it's 876 feet high, I think, from the ground at its highest point. And it's the longest single span bridge, I think, in the United States.
Yeah,
third
I don't
tallest,
know.
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
It's up there. It's like in the top 10 for biggest bridges everywhere in the whole world.
Yeah.
And it's really intimidating, but they have this catwalk underneath the bridge, which is where they set up the rappels, and they have, I don't know, maybe 20 stations, 10 stations, something like that. And every station has a team, and then they have a safety leader for that team. Yeah, and the rappel itself, I think, is around 850, maybe, which is by far the longest I've ever done.
Yeah, you can't do that in a cave in North America. Well, I mean, okay, no, I take that back. There are a few in Mexico where you can do that, but yeah.
Have you been to Mexico yet?
No, not yet. I've had a couple offers, but, you know.
You're in such a good spot. You meet so many people, probably get tons of invites.
I gotta wait a few more years till the kids can take care of themselves, which is fine. You know, I can Derek Bristol this, you know, take a few years off and then go back in a big way.
yeah, absolutely. But it's a little different with Bridge Day because at least for me in a cave, it's dark, you know, you're not seeing the bottom of where you're going.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a big factor, right?
Yeah, it's a huge factor. I'm not an exposure person. I actually was, when I first started caving, I was the biggest coward of all time. I was scared of literally everything.
I feel like that's normal, though. That's just an evolutionary trait. You don't step up to the ledge, you know?
Well, even I remember my vertical training was at this pit called Signal Light. And it's, I think...
I've heard of Signal Light.
Yeah, it's a really easy to get to pit. It's a short walk, and I think it may be 67 feet or something approximately deep. And there's actually a lot of cave at the bottom. And there are these domes in there with... I think there's domes, but there's these rooms that have Civil War signatures all over them. And I have no idea how they rappelled down into that cave.
Wow.
Back during the Civil War.
What in the world?
It's really neat. I highly recommend it. But anyway, it's a relatively small pit. It should be for any caver that's been vertical for any length of time. It's going to not be intimidating at all. But I was literally in tears at the lip of this. And then, you know, 2 years later, I'm rappelling off this bridge that's complete exposure. There is no disguising where you're going. You definitely see it all, you know?
But what's this I hear about Fantastic not going that great when you got to, when you got to do Ellison's?
Yep. So Ellison's, is an amazing cave, and I'm really excited to do more caving down there because, yeah, I don't know how familiar you are, but it's an enormous cave that's in Pigeon Mountain.
Yeah.
And at the bottom of Fantastic, there's even more cave. I mean, hours and hours worth of cave down there.
Yeah. I'd love to do a crossover trip one day. I know that's a big trip, but
yes, that's definitely, that's really high on my list. It had been on my list for a while to do Fantastic, as it is probably on every caver's list, at least in tag. We went with some really good friends of ours, and the rope was just the dirtiest, grossest rope you'd ever seen, and like still wet. Yeah. Sorry, Gustavo. And I had my 14 inch rack. I rigged in, and if you've, I don't know what the heaviest amount of rope is that you've lifted, but when it's kind of damp and dirty, it's even heavier. But 600 feet of rope is super heavy.
Yeah.
So it took all my strength to reeve my rack in, and I finally got it in. And then I did not want to go down to four bars because I was absolutely terrified that I was going to have some out of control rappel.
Right.
So I kept it on five bars, and I couldn't move at all.
Because it's all muddy.
It's so muddy. I ended up feeding the rope through the rack, like just using all my muscle. I mean, it must have weighed 50 pounds.
For 580 feet? You're doing that?
No, but probably for 300.
More than you should have, I suppose, maybe.
So that's my mistake. I think I should have gotten some spacers for my rack. That probably would be my recommendation for somebody that's overly.
Did you just drop down to four?
No, I never went before.
Oh, you just met. Okay, jeez.
Eventually, though, I picked up some speed.
Okay.
But if I were going to do it again, I would absolutely drop down to four. I might even consider doing it with my 18-inch rack that I got for Bridge Day. Because with an 18-inch rack, it is big and bulky, but you get so much more variability, and you can just spread that bottom bar out, and it's so smooth and nice. But yeah, we made it to the bottom, and then we didn't do any caving down there, and then we climbed up, and Andy and I did tandem up to the top, and it's a long way.
It's a long way, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you rappel from the attic or below there?
There's the attic and the...
Yeah, I can't remember what the one
the
below.
The balcony. Yeah.
Balcony,
so
that's right.
I can't remember which is which, but it's the one that pretty much everybody does. It's not the one that's hard to get to.
Gotcha.
One of them, you have to do this really awful squeezy thing.
Oh, okay. Didn't do that one.
No. Leading up to the pit, have you been to Fantastic?
No.
So I had done several trips prior where you just kind of go to the edge of it, because you can look over the edge of Fantastic. But to get there, there's this traverse there is a traverse line. So you're clipped in with your cow's tails, but it's still maybe a 2 foot wide ledge that you have to crawl on. You can't stand up on. Around the top of this 586 foot pit.
I don't know if I could do it. I'm sure if I were there and I had to, I would, but geez, just the thought of it.
Well, you're rigged in, but can you imagine just slipping and putting, wading your cow's tails over the edge of Fantastic?
No.
I think I would, I'd need a change of underwear.
Again, thankful it's dark. Thankful it's dark.
Yeah.
All right. So, let's shift gears. I want to talk about this tower that they're doing at the headquarters. So do you know about this? Are you a good person to talk to about this?
I'm a great person to talk to about this.
Okay. Vertical Bills Tower.
That's right. Vertical Bills Tower. So, hopefully everyone knows, but you may not, especially if you're a newer caver, but there was a man named Bill Cuddington, and he's generally regarded as the father of vertical caving.
Yeah.
He didn't invent the rack, but he pioneered descending on it and climbing on a single rope technique.
Yeah.
I think he was using prussic at first. I'm not really sure, but either way, he dedicated his whole life, him and his wife, Miriam, to teaching people these techniques and exploring caves. He's the reason that people are even vertical. Before pits were seen more as a nuisance, not as an exciting feature to, you know, descend or ascend.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, this cave's got a pit. Well, I guess we'll just go to a different one.
Wow.
The thought. So Bill passed away in August. I think he was in his 80s. So he had a very long career. But as a way to honor him, the NSS is erecting a climbing tower at headquarters in his honor. So it's going to be named after him. It's going to be called Vertical Bill's Tower.
How exciting.
And yeah, it's going to be like probably metal tower that's going to have multiple levels, and it'll be the perfect training ground for beginner vertical cavers, rescue commissions like NCRC. We're hoping like the Boy Scouts will be able to use it. Anybody, grottos from all over the nation can come and use it. Our headquarters is in Huntsville, and there's this, it's a beautiful property that not enough NSS members come to.
Mm.
There's a whole museum there. There's free camping there. We're going to have these classrooms renovated, so we'll be able to have educational classes. But this vertical tower is going to be amazing. It's going to cost some money, obviously, to erect. So we're going to try to fundraise, I think, about $150,000 for that. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, that sounds fair.
Yeah. Well,
it's going to take that.
The actual construction might be, you know, $50,000 to $100,000, but there's going to be maintenance and insurance and fencing needed to be put up around it. But I think it's going to be absolutely magnificent when it's finished. Maureen Handler, she is the operations vice president for the NSS, and she runs, basically takes care of the headquarters and does all the maintenance there, or has it done. So she's gotten in touch with companies that do this for, like, professionally. They mm-hmm. create obstacle courses and climbing towers and things like that. So I think it'll be totally spectacular. And it'd be a really exciting place for cavers to come and learn, you know, possibly better than a tree in somebody's yard.
Possibly. Yeah. That's a pretty good bet. That's terrific. I didn't know this was happening.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I encourage everyone to come out and see the headquarters. If you haven't been there, there's actually caves on the NSS headquarters property.
Yeah. Quite a few. Well, I guess not quite a few, but more than one.
Yes. Yeah. Multiple caves. I've only been to one of them called Tree Root, which is really cool. It's just a small cave. It has a pit, like it's a horizontal entrance. And then there's a pit in the back of it. But the really cool thing that it's named after, obviously, is that tree roots grow from the top down into the cave. And it looks really neat.
Awesome.
But camping is free there. And there's tons of caves in Huntsville. And of course, all the caving you could want within 2 hours. So.
What is the current state of the NSS? Like, where is membership? Like, a few years ago, we were talking about, like, we need more members. And is the story still the same?
Well, the story is looking positive. We have just under 8,000 members right now.
Wow.
Yeah, we have a lot. We lost some a few years back, I think. But the good news is that membership is on the rise. We're having a lot more people join. I think a lot more young people are interested in joining the NSS. And it's such a valuable resource. Sure, your local grotto is great, but you know, the NSS puts on the convention. If you've never been to a convention, I highly recommend it. I went to my first one last year out in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much different than the Tagfall Cave-In, or I imagine any other caving gathering, because it's so science-based. You have all these leaders of karst and karst study, and they're putting on presentations about their area of, like, their specialties, and you can just learn so much. It's absolutely fascinating, and you can meet all these scientists and geologists. It's quite an experience. So that's a really cool thing, and I don't think, at least in the United States, there's no other caving gathering that compares. You know, of course, the NSS News is amazing. There's no better way to kind of keep up with what's happening in the caving world in the United States and abroad, that we publish all the expeditions that happen and stuff like that. So it's a really good resource. I'm really proud to represent the organization.
All right. So speaking of the Board of Governors meeting, in Colorado, right?
Yeah. So the Board of Governors meets 3 times a year. That's a requirement that we meet and do business. So one of those is always at the convention.
Right.
And then we had our fall meeting it was actually over Halloween weekend. And that was in Golden, Colorado, which is just outside of Denver.
Yeah.
I actually lived in Colorado briefly, but I had never done any caving out there. And some people out there were kind enough to take me and my partner. It was Hunter Klein, I think. He took us out there. We had our first caving experience out there to Hucka Cove Cave.
Hucka Cove? All right.
Right, Hucka Cove. So I don't know if you've ever heard this, but they actually call Colorado Crawlerado.
I think I have heard that.
Yeah. And
they could call Indiana that too, but there's no way to meld those two words.
Yeah, right. Well, it kind of made me realize just how spoiled we are in TAG because.
Yeah, you got blocking passage and vertical and all kinds of fun stuff, and we're crawling in the mud.
Right? Yeah. So they told me that Hucka Cove was kind of a mid-tier cave out there. It's near Cave of the Winds. It's in that same. Yeah,
I've been to Cave of the Winds, but that is awfully ominous. It's a mid-tier cave. I mean, you've heard how miserable it gets here. It's about mid-level, you know, for a caver to say that, you're in for it.
No, I mean, they meant it as a positive. Like,
well, sure they did.
Yeah. So it definitely was a lot of crawling, but it was very sporty, which I enjoyed. And it was kind of funny because the cave had a very small formation area. And they're like, oh, you know, wait till you get here to the formation area. And it was like 2 curtains and I think like a baby flow stone or something. And I was like, oh, that's really nice.
So where is the formation area again? Oh, no, yeah. This is it? Okay, all right.
Yeah. Well, it's just compared to TAG.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so beautiful underground here. It's insane, you know. But apparently there are some really pretty caves out in Colorado that I just didn't have the pull to get into. But
well, yeah, no. And look, if you're from Colorado and you're hearing this and you're angry, yes, there's some gorgeous, gorgeous stuff out there. But yeah, I mean, compared to some other places, there's no comparison.
Yeah. Well, and so also Colorado had already had their first snow. So all the alpine stuff was already off limits because it was covered in snow.
Duh. Yeah. So
they can only cave. They can't really cave that much in the winter. They go down to New Mexico a lot, and they also drive up to South Dakota a lot for their caving. So that's another thing. They have to drive a lot of times 6 hours just to get to.
Yeah.
And it's more restrictive out there as well. I'm not sure exactly, but it's not as easy to cave as it is in TAG.
Yeah.
But I'd very much like to go out to New Mexico and do some real caving out there. Because I know the quads are supposed to be spectacular. The caves are supposed to be amazing. I mean, just look at La Chiquilla, right?
Right.
That's the ultimate cave.
Yeah.
Which I would love to go to someday, but we'll see.
And Fort Stanton Cave down there too. I mean, gosh, it's just some incredible ancient rock down there.
Yeah. And they're formed in that different way, right? With the
bottom up sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I know Lech is. I can't speak to anything else, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess it might be a mixture. So that's definitely on the agenda. I'd like to do some more caving outside of TAG. I haven't really done too much besides in Virginia and South Dakota and now Colorado.
So you're going
to be saying I would like to maybe see about some longer caving things. I'd like to join in on some of the Mexico stuff, take some trips down there.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
You doing the Caving Academy next year?
Yes.
You're planning on doing that? Right on.
I'm so excited for that. Yeah. So this past year they had the inaugural caving course, and it was held in Hungary.
Right.
And it was put on by, they call themselves the Caving Academy. And they did the gauntlet at the TAG Fall Cave-In. So if you came to that, which I know you didn't have a chance to, but they did this amazing ropes course that was divided into 2 sides. On one side was a sort of proving grounds where they had all the separate skills set up. So, you know, they had a J-hang, they had a guided rappel, they had a rope for changeovers, everything, right? Rebelays, that. And so you first had to do that side and kind of prove yourself, or you could just play around and brush up your skills. And they had all these great instructors there that would sort of guide you through it. And then if you were successful on that side and they felt comfortable with your skills, they had a whole other side that was like this, was sort of like a race course for cavers. And so they had these huge J hangs, and then they had corrugated plastic tunnels set up around ropes. So you're on rope, but it's simulated like you're going through a cave. They even had dowels set up inside the corrugated tunnels to simulate formations. And if you if you broke one, then you lost points.
Ah.
Yeah. And they even had it rigged up with water. So they would have hoses going down in the top of some of these tubes. So it would be like a wet climb or a wet drop.
Wow. They thought of everything.
Yeah. It was fantastic. I actually didn't even make it to that side. I was pretty busy at the cave-in. But just seeing that kind of showed me what a cool experience this is going to be. Our friend Gustavo, he went to the last one in Hungary, and he said it was really cool. So I'm hoping to learn all sorts of different rigging, and I'm hoping to see some Hungarian caves. After that, we're going to head over to England and meet our friend Paul Fairman, who's a British caver, and he's going to take us caving over there. So I'm really excited to see what caves in the UK hold.
Oh man, you going to go to OFD?
Oh, what's that?
Ogafun and Thee. It's like this big one in Wales that everybody knows about, or I shouldn't say that because you didn't know about it, but it's this big one in Wales that super famous, I guess.
Is that the one where the rescue was?
I think they've had a few there, actually. Oh. It's very popular.
Okay. Yeah. There was one last year where some guy, I think, got caught in some rock fall underground, and it took, I don't know, 50 hours or something to rescue him.
Ugh.
Had his teeth knocked out and stuff. It was terrible.
Ah,
well, yeah.
Hopefully nothing like that happens to you.
I hope not. Then you'll have to have me back and you can interview me about the trauma.
Yeah, we'll do a shorty about the about the bad experience. Oh, no.
That'll be really interesting.
It'll be the caving podcast, caving accidents edition.
I probably could. We all have these morbid fascinations with the rescues and things like that. I know it's a very popular topic.
Well, but it's important to learn about. I mean, it's why it's put out, so that we can learn from the mistakes. But yeah, there's also a curiosity to it that that everybody wants to know about. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like why so many people say, if you're not going to get into the rescue world, at least take OCR. To just, you know, because it just teaches you to be a better caver. It teaches you the consequences of carelessness, and what has to go into, you know, a rescue should one be needed.
Absolutely. But there's I'd like to take one of those spar courses.
Oh yeah, me too.
It'd be good. And I know NCRC, they're holding classes in somewhere in Alabama this next year, but that would be really cool. It's just expensive. It's,
yeah,
I think over $1,000 for the first, for level one.
I know that, there's a grotto near me, the Bloomington Grotto. They offer, I think through them, and I think through our grotto, they offer scholarships to people who really want to go, and they'll like take applications because they do recognize that there is kind of a prohibitive cost for some people. And I think that that's really great. I think other grottos do that sort of thing too. And, that's a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. That's really nice.
And, Mickey, I guess you're the fundraising chair as well.
Yeah, that's true. it's a role that I accepted. Christine Ebrey, she's the president of the NSS. She was looking for somebody to fill the role. And I don't have any experience in fundraising, but I am really fun and sociable generally.
So, well, you know what? That's a start. That's a good way to start. So you're not going to be a sort of put the thumbscrews to them kind of fundraising chair. You're going to be a little more cordial, I guess.
I'm afraid not. but it's an important role because, you know, the NSS is a nonprofit. We're completely sustained by donations and then, you know, investments from those donations, which is really great. So hopefully we'll have a lot of longevity and the NSS is going to be around for hopefully forever. But your donations are super important to the cause, particularly right now we're raising money for the Bill Cuddington Tower, Vertical Bills Tower.
Which, as you heard before, is going to be about $150,000.
Yeah. That's a lot of money. It's not cheap to do these things. Right. So I would really encourage anyone to donate, you know, even if it's just small amounts. You know, I just donated $50 myself to the tower, and I don't have a ton of cash laying around, but I felt like it was important. And giving is one of the things that, especially in the holiday season, it's important to kind of spread your money around to good things too, outside of yourself. But yeah, I'm hoping to think of fun ways that we can bring in money to the NSS and spend it on the things that the membership wants for the good of the society and the betterment of the society rather.
And Bill's Tower seems like sort of the most visible and immediate need, but there are plenty of other things that this money could go to as well. Just general upkeep probably.
Oh yeah. Right? And I mean, preserve maintenance and acquisition. If you go on our website, which is caves.org, and you click donate, you'll see a whole list of different funds. And so your money could go to, you know, fund expeditions, education, preserves, things like that. There's so many different places. And the NSS has to use the money that you donate for what you specify. And that's part of being a nonprofit, is we don't just get to take your money and then spend it willy-nilly. It goes specifically where you want it. So if you have a passion, that's where you can donate your money.
It's you can donate it to something that sounds sexy, or you can just donate it to the general fund, which may sound boring, but they'll put it to good use, to be sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're also looking for directors for the spring. So every spring there's an election. And if you're interested in being one of the national directors, Anna is our new nominating chair.
Anna Pierce?
Anna Pierce, that's okay. Right. And so if you know somebody that might be good at this job, or if you yourself are interested, you can email her at apierce@caves.org or nominating@caves.org. And you really don't need a ton of experience. You just need passion, a thoughtful nature, I think, and a love for caves and caving. So if you're interested, please reach out. That would be really cool.
And that's A. Pierce. Pierce is in PEARCE at caves.org. And you said nominating at caves.org?
That's right. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and that's a great way to get involved at the national level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I encourage anyone to get involved at any level they want, whether it's their local grotto or their local karst conservancy, or even at the national level, even if you haven't had any experience. All they need are people who care, really.
Oh, another thing, too, that is really cool, and it's something that I'm doing for myself, but you can become a lifetime member of the NSS.
Yeah.
And a lifetime membership is really important, because we take that money and it's $1,000 to become a lifetime member. Well, after that, you never have to pay dues again.
Okay, so that's the one. If you go with like a one lump sum thing, it's $1,000 right now.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. And then after that, you never have to pay dues again. But that money gets invested, and then we get the interest from that investment account. So it's a really helpful way to be a member. And you can, a lot of people don't know this, but you can do a payment plan. So for me, I don't have $1,000 just hanging out that I'm going to give to the NSS. So I'm paying $100 a year. And then at the end of 10 years, you know, or maybe sooner, if I decide to pay a little bit more, I'll be a lifetime member. So anybody can do that. You just call the NSS office. You can't do it online. You do have to call the headquarters, but they can hook you up. And hopefully I'll get one of those cool little license plates.
There you go. That's worth $1,000.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Mickey, as we wrap up, what do you got planned? What's next? Where are you going?
Oh gosh, do I have anything planned right now? I'm actually hoping to do more surveying. That's something that I want to learn. I haven't really done too much of it. I've done a little bit of sketching, mm-hmm. and
you sketched
I'd like
in
to
Fisher
do-
Ridge recently, right? Sort of.
Yeah,
recently?
Ben Tobin, who's another director, and just a really smart guy. He's a hydrogeologist, I think, and just pretty brilliant. But he invited me to come up. Fisher Ridge is this huge cave system. It's, I think, I want to say 109 miles long or something right now.
Yeah, Kentucky.
And it's right by Mammoth Cave. In fact, I think they suspect that it joins somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah, yeah. But we don't talk about that, right?
Right. No. but yeah, I did my first little baby sketch thanks to his guidance. So that was quite an experience. And I don't know if you've been up there. It's pretty close to you, right?
I haven't been there. I've actually, I feel like a broken record. I've been invited to go and survey in Fisher Ridge. I've never surveyed before and I haven't been able to make it. So
yeah.
That's the story of my life.
Well, I get it. You know, you gotta pick some things in life.
Yeah.
and that's, I feel that way all the time. There's so much that I want to do. And if I could just quit my job and go caving every day,
if only.
I would 100% do that. But the one entrance that we went into is actually this corrugated steel pipe that's just completely vertical. I think it's about a 60-foot vertical drop. You kind of hop in the top of this tube like Mario from Mario Brothers going down.
Pew, pew,
and that's how you enter it. But that region of caves is really interesting because there's so much huge walking borehole just in a straight line.
Yeah. What's on your dream list?
Oh gosh.
I mean, we don't have all day, but
right.
What's at the top?
Well, 100% Lechuguilla, well,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's everybody's top, right?
Yeah. It goes without saying.
I hope they get all those politics worked out. I know it's really difficult right now. The park service is wanting some things that make it really hard for people to visit now.
Mm.
But I hope they get it straightened out. And then after that, I think I'd just like to experience some international caving. So I'd like to go down to Mexico, maybe join in on Pesh sometime. I'll have to talk to Bill about that one.
I'm sure he'd love to have you.
He's a super nice guy. I have to reach out to him. But yeah,
I need to have him back on the podcast. We did not get into nearly enough when I talked to Bill Steele.
He's incredible, and he's been caving so long, and he's touched so much.
Yeah, there was no way we could get it done in an hour and a half like we tried. So yeah, I'll have to come back to part two from him.
Well, I liked the two parter that you did with Marion Akers.
Oh
that
yeah, she was wonderful.
She's brilliant. Yeah,
indeed.
But yeah, maybe I don't know. We'll start with Hungary and England, then maybe follow it up with Mexico and see what takes me where.
Well, Mickey, I really appreciate what you're doing for the NSS and also, you know, Dogwood City Grotto. But, you know, to be involved in leadership on a national level, you know, 3 years into caving, I mean, that's a meteoric rise, but it's one that's totally possible for anybody, you know? I mean, you don't have to be the level of caver that you do. You just have to be passionate about it. And we all kind of are, you know? So that's encouraging and that's inspiring, I think. To know that somebody who's, you know, 3 years in can get to that level. So thank you for that.
Well, it's my pleasure. And thank you so much for having me. And really thank you everyone for allowing me to serve. It's really a privilege. And I'm so happy to be here. So I hope I'm caving until I die.
Yeah, indeed. Mickey, thank you. Have a great one.
Thanks, Matt. Bye.
And by the way, Mickey informed me a couple of weeks after we did this interview that her partner, Andy, made her a full-fledged lifetime member of the NSS as a Christmas present. Makes a great gift, people, even after the holidays. And she did get that cool license plate. Thank you so much, Mickey, and thank you for listening. Again, links in the description of this podcast to Sophie Reaptress, our sponsor. Also, Carter Cave State Resort Park's Winter Adventure Weekend, where I'll be delivering the keynote speech at the end of this month, January, last weekend of January. I hope you can make it. The two email addresses that Mickey mentioned to nominate directors for the NSS are in there as well as a link to donate to Vertical Bill's Tower Fund and the link to find your local grotto at the NSS website, caves.org, all in the description of this podcast. Thanks again to our sponsor, Sophie Reaptress, and our past sponsors, Swago at swagogear.com, Organic Robot Designs. Get t-shirts for your grotto printed in Greenfield, Indiana from Organic Robot. It's a potential fundraising opportunity for your grotto. If you don't have t-shirts, man, what do you got? Also, El Spilio, which I believe is now being sold by On Rope One. And what am I missing? What am I forgetting? Oh, who do I have next month? Actually, I've got a few irons in the fire. I haven't really decided what's coming next month. I've got one interview in the can, and I've got two or three more coming in January. So it'll be one of those. It'll be one of those. I can't quite decide which one just yet. So sorry about that. Until then, I'm Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. And until next time, kill nothing but time.